Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked On Wolves. Today on the show, let's revisit the three very specific things Rudy Gobert is going to bring to the Timberwolves. John Schumann of NBA.com detailed these in a film study this weekend. I want to cover those here today on the show, plus an update on Taurean Prince's legal situation and a note on the Kevin Durant. Just how interested were the Timberwolves really in the mix to trade for Kevin Durant among the teams that were in conversations with Brooklyn earlier this offseason? We'll talk about all that on the show here today. Welcome in. You are Locked On Wolves.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beek and I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. A big thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen each and every day. Locked On Wolves is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, and of course our friends at Odyssey. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at B Beacon with two B's, two E's, C-K. Ian, happy Monday, everybody. Hopefully you had a fantastic weekend. Today on the show, I want to get into some Gobert stuff. John Schumann at NBA.com wrote a great article, kind of a film study on Gobert. Nothing really groundbreaking, although there were a couple of statistics that I thought were pretty interesting. So I want to get into those. We'll talk about Taurean Prince here in a little bit. Some additional information came out. Of course, I recorded Friday's show late Thursday after the news had broken that he had been arrested. We found out a lot more over the course of Friday and Saturday, so I want to kind of cover that. And then some Durant news and notes, I guess, really some additional insight that Shams Charania gave related to the Durant trade talks earlier this offseason. So we'll close the show with that here today. We're, of course, now only about 3 weeks away from training camp, media day, all that good stuff. Well, I guess other flip the order, media day, then training camp, then preseason. And really, I mean, we're what, 6 weeks away from the regular season starting? As crazy as that is, we're already there. We're plugging through the off season. The Minnesota State Fair is ongoing. Tim Connolly was there on Friday, so he was out, you know, doing Minnesota State Fair things, as is of course required of all new Timberwolves front office executives. And there's been a lot of them over the past forever. Connolly did those on Friday. He did some media stuff. So there's a little bit more out there, you know, nothing groundbreaking there from Tim Connolly, but he's out and about in the Minneapolis media. So I want to talk Gobert. So if you head over to NBA.com, it's still one of the featured articles here as we get into Monday morning on NBA.com. I think it's like fifth on their little slider on the homepage, but it's an article written by John Schumann. If you listen to the show regularly, you know I love everything he writes. He does their weekly power rankings at NBA.com, and by far the best power rankings, the most well thought out, well-reasoned. I learned something. I literally cover the Timberwolves. I follow them extremely closely. Obviously, I spent a lot of time researching, you know, Timberwolves film, Timberwolves statistics. And John Schumann, I learned something when I read his power rankings about the Timberwolves every single week during the season. So when I say that, you know, I read everything he puts out in the offseason, and he did a fantastic job breaking down the Gobert acquisition, and specifically the way that Gobert will, in his words, transform the Timberwolves defense. So the headline of this article is, film study, Rudy Gobert will transform Wolves, in parentheses, already improved defense. So Schumann actually spent some time in the intro detailing just how improved the Wolves defense was last year. And I thought this was super fascinating. So I'm going to read a couple of excerpts. Schumann says the Wolves were one of the league's most improved teams last season, seeing the biggest jump in winning percentage with a 0.242 improvement in winning percentage, and the second biggest jump in the league in point differential per 100 possessions, which is a +8 improvement. And, you know, I'm a big fan of point differential, Pythagorean record, you know, kind of that whole what's the expected number of wins for a team with said point differential. The Wolves had the second biggest point differential per 100 possession jump last year, the biggest actual winning percentage of any team in the league. He also says with the offseason addition of Rudy Gobert, the Wolves are hoping to be one of the league's most improved teams again. They went from bad to good, but there are certainly a few more rungs on that ladder. Now, side note, I talk about this on the show all the time. The jump, and I usually send it regard to a player, right? So I talked about this with D'Angelo Russell's defense all the time last season. The jump from awful to like average or decent or slightly above average is a lot of times just as big as the jump from average to superstar, fantastic, elite, whatever you want to call it. So D'Lo going from horrible to average at defense is essentially the same as like any other player going from good to having a breakout superstar year. that difference a lot of times is the same gap. And it means a lot to see that improvement. That's true when it comes to teams as well. The Wolves were really bad a couple of years ago, and they were good last year. But they weren't a true contender, right? They were a first round playoff team that lost in the first round. And you know, what's the next move? Is it the second round exit? Can they get to the conference finals? What are the next? Can they skip a rung? You know, what do they have to do to get to the next level? Schumann also points out that the Wolves were the fourth most improved defensive team last season, climbing from 28th the year prior in the 19-20 season to 13th last year in points allowed per 100 possessions. We've talked about this ad nauseum as well. They were a top 10 defensive team prior to Christmas last year. And, you know, the story is well documented how they were able to do that, the blitzing defense, creating turnovers. Even though they were a poor defensive rebounding team and they committed way too many fouls, they forced so many turnovers and did a good job of blocking shots. And, you know, early in the season, we're a really good defensive three-point team. There's some noise there, right? There was some good fortune with teams missing open threes. But that early season recipe was enough to kind of hang on to the rest of the year and see enough success to finish 13th in defensive efficiency. This is fascinating. Schumann points out that the Wolves are one of two franchises, of course, out of 30. The New Orleans franchise, New Orleans slash Charlotte, this includes the Charlotte Hornets, or the other, that have never had, ever in the history of their franchise, a top five defense. Now, two of the younger franchises, although, I mean, Charlotte's been around, you know, the same length of time as the Wolves, right? Both of those franchises have never had a top five defense. The only top 10 finish ever in 34 years was, of course, in the 03-04 season, the Kevin Garnett MVP season, the conference finals season, the only season when the Wolves won a single playoff series, and of course they won two. They were sixth in defensive efficiency that season. So they finished just outside the top five. They were one of the best probably three or four teams all season long and probably should have been in the finals and maybe could have won a title had Sam Cassell not gotten hurt in the conference finals. But I guess got hurt a little prior to that, but I digress. They finished sixth in 03-04. It's the only top 10 finish in franchise history defensively, which is just, it's not surprising, right? But, you know, I kind of figured that maybe that year they were, when I read this, I was like, well, I guess that makes sense, right? The Wolves have always been bad defensively, but you would have figured they would have had an additional top 10 finish with Kevin Garnett back there, and perhaps they would have been top five in 03-04, but no, not at all. So he makes, over the course of the article, Schumann makes three positive points and then one and one that we've heard before. So I want to start with number one here. He talks about rim protection. Obviously, Gobert brings the ability to protect the rim. He talks about his crazy standing reach. He talks about his blocks per game. He talks about how effective he is in drop coverage. If you're not familiar with that, the cliff notes are in pick and roll. The big, instead of playing at the level of the ball or at the level of the screener, he sags into the paint, maintains enough of a distance for the ball handler to try and keep an angle to allow the ball handler from getting all the way to the rim, but still close enough to contest a mid-range jumper, to hopefully use his length and lateral quickness, mobility, to disrupt passing lanes, which is something that Gobert will be much better at than Towns because he's longer than Towns. He's taller than Towns. But Towns was never good at drop coverage. They ran a ton of it under Flip Saunders, and when David Vanterpool was the associate head coach and defensive coordinator, Towns was not good at it, really, ever. He had a couple stretches where he was decent. That was it. Just was never his coverage. That's what the Jazz played almost exclusively with Rudy Gobert, and especially in the regular season, and saw a ton of success doing it. So but you could bet the Wolves are going to do a bunch of that. He also talks about his ability to kind of sprint across the floor and contest shots from the weak side to erase a shot attempt on the opposite side of the rim, and he's got a couple of gifts in there that illustrate that from Gobert. The Wolves are going to go back to playing a ton of drop coverage. Now, when Gobert's on the bench and Towns is playing the five, they're probably going to be blitzing or at the very, you know, playing Towns at the level where it's a little more aggressive on the perimeter, like what they did last year. Now, there's no Jared Vanderbilt, but Jaden McDaniels can provide some of that same pressure, and depending on who's on the floor, perhaps Anthony Edwards is in that type of a role, or certainly Kyle Anderson. But when Gobert's on the floor, they're going to play drop. And teams are going to try and exploit Towns in pick and roll as much as they can, but the Wolves are going to try and get Gobert in pick and roll. You know, it's going to depend on the person on the floor, but you're going to see a lot more drop coverage from the Wolves this season than we saw a year ago. I want to get to Schumann's last 3 points, two positive, one not so positive here next, and we'll get to Taurean Prince and the Kevin Durant talk here later. First, let's talk about our friends over at the NHTSA. Are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? What's the worst that could happen? You end up driving below the speed limit. It's no big deal, right? Wrong. The truth is your reaction times slow way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high and get a DUI. All right, let's talk about the rest of John Schumann's article at NBA.com. So another positive thing that Rudy Gobert brings to the Wolves and brings to their defense specifically is what Schumann terms as deterrence and foul avoidance. Now, I like this a lot. It's perhaps not surprising. There's a couple of interesting statistics in here, though. So I'll read a little bit of what Schumann says. He talks about how opponents still shot over 64% in the restricted area. Of course, the 3 feet around the rim there when Gobert was on the floor last season, but where his impact is felt most is preventing the restricted area shots in the first place. With Gobert on the floor last season, Jazz opponents took only 22% of their shots in the restricted area. Now think about that. Like think about the Morey ball, right? When Daryl Morey was in Houston and the way that teams started playing back, you know, Gerson Rosas was in charge of the G League team, Rio Grande Valley Vipers, when Morey was running the Rockets and Sachin Gupta was involved on there, the current, you know, number two in the Timberwolves front office. Teams are all about attempting threes and attempting shots at the rim. So Jazz opponents only taking 22% of their shots at the rim or in their restricted area is significant. When he was off the floor, teams were attempting 29% of their shots in the restricted area. And Schumann points out the backup for Gobert last season was often Hassan Whiteside, who's not a bad rim protector. He's just not Rudy Gobert. So teams were attempting 7% more shots from inside the restricted area with Whiteside on the floor than they were with Gobert on the floor. And Gobert is not only blocking shots at the rim, but he's deterring teams from even taking shots at the rim. And then he says, put the blocks and contests and the deterrence together. And the Jazz allowed 8.6 fewer points per 48 minutes in the restricted area with Gobert on the floor than with him off the floor. 8.6 fewer points per 48 minutes. That's insane. And then he says, for comparison, the Sixers only allowed 1.6 fewer per 48 with Joel Embiid on the floor versus when they did with him off. So, I mean, no, I don't think anyone's arguing that Embiid's is anywhere near as good of a defender as Gobert, but obviously Embiid's the better overall player. The difference there, I mean, the Jazz allowed 7 fewer points per 48 in you know, comparing, that's a 7-point difference between Gobert and Embiid, I guess is a better way to say that. That's really significant. And then also Gobert doesn't foul very often. Utah opponents registered just 19 free throw attempts per 100 shots from the field when Gobert was on the floor, Schumann says. The lowest on-court mark for anybody in the Jazz rotation, and Gobert's presence on the floor had a much bigger impact on how often their opponents got to the line than it did on how often they grabbed offensive rebounds. He also ranked second in the league in defensive rebounding percentage. So the Wolves struggled with defensive rebounding last year. I mentioned that in the first segment. They did. They were a bad defensive rebounding team. Towns' numbers dipped partly because he was playing aggressive pick-and-roll coverage on the perimeter. He wasn't in the paint nearly as often. And the Wolves didn't have very many good, you know, Vanderbilt's a good defensive rebounder, but he's a little undersized. Jaden McDaniels, when he played the four, wasn't a great defensive rebounder. You know, Naz Reid wasn't a great defensive rebounder as a backup center. The Wolves just weren't a good defensive rebounding team. Gobert changes that. The Wolves also fouled too much. They were one of the worst teams in the league at defensive rebounding, one of the worst teams in the league in fouling. Gobert not only helps cover some of Towns' weaknesses, he covers the Wolves' weaknesses as a whole. Gobert doesn't foul a ton, and he's a great rebounder, and he's a great rim protector. All areas, not just Towns, but the Wolves as a whole really struggled last year. And yet they were the 13th best defense in the league. You better believe Tim Connelly looked at this and said, hey, we were a top half defense for much of the year, a 9, 10, 11, 12th defense of the league. We finished 13th in defense, the Timberwolves did last year, while being bad at everything that Rudy Gobert is good at. Arguably the best at. Certainly, you could argue he's the best shot blocker in the league. You could argue he's a top 3 defensive rebounder in the league, and he's really good at not fouling. You add him to a team that's good at basically everything else, and yeah, you lose Patrick Beverley. There's some changes, but you also add Kyle Anderson. Jaden McDaniels keeps getting better. You play him at the 3. You play bigger. D'Angelo Russell gives you that same effort. You have Jordan McLaughlin as your backup point guard who's going to give you effort defensively. The only minus defensive player in the likely rotation is Jalen Noel. The only one. Everybody else in the Timberwolves' likely rotation is a plus defensive player or average. D'Angelo Russell, I'm projecting a bit here, But last year, he was a pretty average defensive player. I'll give you slightly below average. So fine. We'll include him for argument's sake. But we're talking of the 10 guys. I mean, Anthony Edwards is a better than average on-ball defender. He has work to do off ball, but he's very good on the ball. Jaden McDaniels, a plus defensive player. Rudy Gobert, a plus defensive player. Kyle Anderson, Torian Prince, a good defensive player. Towns, as a four, should be an okay defensive player. He was not bad last year. I want to be clear about that. Towns was, he's got the reputation that it's out there, but he was not a bad defensive player last year. Noel was, and Jordan McLaughlin's undersized, but competes defensively. So you're talking about a team that was 13th defensively, and the only real loss you have that's going to hurt you is Patrick Beverley in terms of your defense. Jared Vanderbilt was good in blitzing, but you're replacing him with Rudy Gobert, right? You're essentially replacing him with Rudy Gobert. Malik Beasley was a bad defender. He was improved last year, but still a bad defender. And I've already acknowledged Beverly's gone, but Gobert's replacing Vanderbilt, so you're upgrading. So your only real loss is Patrick Beverley. And so everything that Gobert is bringing to the table in terms of deterrence, actual foul avoidance, and actual rim protection is really significant. And then the last thing noted by Schumann that's positive is defending in space. Gobert is a pretty good at defending in space. And pretty good at contesting jumpers as well. I mean, we saw this, we'll talk in a minute about teams putting the Jazz in five out, you know, teams playing five out offense against the Jazz and Utah struggling with that. But Rudy's not a bad perimeter defender. He can hold his own. And Schumann points out among 207 players who've defended at least 250 isolations over the last three seasons, which you better believe is because teams are trying to do that. They'd rather pull Gobert onto the perimeter than have him lurking in the paint. Gobert ranks 15th out of 207 players, not just centers, not just bigs, 15th out of 207 players who've defended at least 250 isolations over the last three seasons in points per chance allowed, 0.84, according to Second Spectrum tracking. That's phenomenal for a 7'1", 7'2 guy with a massive wingspan. That's phenomenal. It just is. And then the last thing Schumann points out is the issues in the playoffs. And he doesn't really give a solution for this. He just talks about how, you know, Dallas did this famously last year, playing five out, beating him off the dribble a little bit. And they actually scored really well when they isolated against Gobert in the playoffs. Now, that's a really small sample size in the playoffs, which is, you know, a bit different. But he also points out that Gobert still defended shots at the rim fairly well, right? Like the numbers were little down in the playoffs, but this wasn't a Gobert problem. And I've talked about this till I was blue in the face over earlier this offseason. You go back to July. I spent a lot of time talking about the Jazz had a lot bigger issues than Rudy Gobert defensively. Gobert was not the issue. Yeah, he had a couple of bad clips that made their way around social media, you know, in the playoffs, I should say. But the Wolves have far better perimeter defenders. We could talk about this, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Torian Prince, Kyle Anderson. Then all those guys are all better than what the Jazz had to offer last year in the playoffs. Teams are going to try and play five out. I actually think the bigger concern is teams trying to go at Towns with faster, quicker forwards, you know, combo forwards that can beat Towns off the dribble, potentially get him into foul trouble. That's the biggest issue. And there's no perfect fit, right? Chris Finch is still going to have to figure this out. How will they keep Towns on the floor? How will they keep Gobert from getting put on skates too frequently on the perimeter? And again, he does a pretty good job holding his own other than in this Mavericks series. But what does this look like for the Wolves next year? And it's a fair question. It is the question. And frankly, it's going to hang over this team as ridiculous as it is. If the Wolves go, you know, 16-4 in their first 20 games and they're playing on TNT in December and halftime show and Chuck's going to, you know, say they're up 15 on the Clippers, wherever they're playing in December and Charles Barkley says something to the effect of, oh yeah, but what happens in the playoffs? The Jazz won, you know, the Jazz have the best record in the regular season over the last 5 years, which is true in the Western Conference, you know, but look what happened to them. They never got out of the second round of the playoffs. That's going to hang over the Wolves this season. So be prepared for that. People are going to say, yeah, but about the Wolves until they get to the playoffs. But as Timberwolves fans, the job here is to just enjoy it and know that the Wolves are going to be good this year. I don't know that they'll go 16-4 in their first 20. They might. They've got a pretty decently easy start to the schedule, hopefully, is what it looks like at least. But just know that, like, you can enjoy the ride and worry about the playoffs when they come. And hey, as Timberwolves fans know, the Wolves get to the second round. That's only the second time in 34 years or I guess it will be 35 years that that's ever happened. So we can worry about that when we get there. But that is something that, that, you know, that conversation is going to have to be had as we get to the playoffs. So go check that article at NBA.com. John Schumann, again, the film study on Rudy Gobert transforming the Wolves defense. He's got some good clips. It's a good read and a lot of fun. So go check that out. I want to talk Torian Prince. I want to talk Kevin Durant here next as we close the show. All right, our last topic on Friday's show last week was a disappointing, not a fun topic. Of course, Torian Prince was arrested on Thursday in Miami at the Miami airport due to a warrant that had been issued in Texas that was related to a traffic stop. At the time, we didn't know a whole lot other than that it had to do with quote-unquote dangerous drugs is what was listed in the warrant from Texas. But we didn't know much else at the time, and I didn't want to speculate. And it was a good thing we didn't speculate because I'm not going to try and downplay this. It's obviously serious, but he was released on Friday on a $2,500 bond. Apparently he didn't, according to his defense attorney, he did not know there had been a warrant issued because this had to do with a traffic stop in May due to an expired registration. And they tested a vape pen. They tested the substance inside the vape pen, found out later, the police did, that it was THC oil, which is illegal in Texas, trace amounts, I believe. So then the warrant was issued. Torian was unaware the warrant was issued. So now he's got to go back to Texas and deal with the warrant. It sounds like, and according to his defense attorney, he says it's in the process of being dismissed, is what the defense attorney said in Florida in the court. So perhaps the whole thing's dismissed. And in that case, I don't know that there's any sort of disciplinary action at all. And then I guess the other issue, the reason there was a warrant is because Prince had two guns with him that were legal. He told the police at the time they were legal. They were registered. Nothing illegal about them. But because the other piece of it, that the THC piece was illegal, he was in, you know, committing a felony while in possession of guns, which is a criminal offense. Or, it's illegal to carry a gun while engaging in a criminal offense, which feels kind of redundant because if you're engaging in a criminal offense, you're already doing something illegal. But at any rate, that's apparently what escalated it, made it more serious, allowed them to issue a warrant that he was unaware of. But it sounds like if this all gets cleared up, the guns were completely legal. This was, maybe there is still some sort of charge related to the THC oil. Who knows? We'll see how it shakes out. It feels less serious sitting here now on Monday than it did late Thursday when I recorded that podcast that posted on Friday morning. So hopefully this turns into nothing, long term. And, we don't have to worry about what happens to Torian Prince's role in the rotation and that Torian is on the court at the start of the season next year. So that's that. And I'd love for this to be the last time that we talk about it on this show. The last thing is Shams Charania, of course, of The Athletic and Stadium said in a podcast the other day, the Stu Gotts podcast was talking a bit about the overall pursuit of Kevin Durant by other teams. Of course, he's now staying in Brooklyn. And he listed several teams that were very interested in him. Miami, Brooklyn was interested in, he told Brooklyn he was interested in Miami as well as going to Phoenix. And I guess Brooklyn wasn't interested in DeAndre Ayton, according to Shams. And so that wasn't a real situation. The Celtics, the Raptors, the Grizzlies were all interested. So there's like six teams that were listed. What did I say? Miami, Phoenix, Boston, Toronto, Memphis. The Timberwolves were the sixth team listed. Of course, we knew that the Wolves had contacted Brooklyn multiple times, was the reporting from several different people, said the Wolves had reached out multiple times to try and get Kevin Durant. This is all prior to the Gobert trade, offering, I'm sure, what they ended up trading for Gobert. And Brooklyn said, no, we want Towns and Edwards. And I think the Wolves said, it sounds like, we don't want to trade you either one of them. No Towns and no Edwards. Brooklyn said we want both. So clearly things were never close, and who knows how Kevin Durant would have handled being traded to the Timberwolves. Well, I'm pretty sure I know how he would have handled it. But anyway, the conversations were had. Shams says Brooklyn could have made a deal that was heavy in draft compensation with Phoenix, Memphis, or the Timberwolves before the Wolves then traded that offer to Utah for Rudy Gobert. But the Nets only wanted to remain competitive. I mean, they weren't interested in DeAndre Ayton. They apparently weren't interested in any number of other players that were offered to them, but didn't want the draft pick compensation. And then, of course, we talked on Friday's show also about how the Wolves apparently wrecked the market for everybody else by trading. I'm sure it was a copy and paste of, hey, we offered this for Durant. we'll give it to you for Rudy, basically. And they got Rudy Gobert. And obviously Durant is the top five player in the league, was for a while the best player in the league before he got hurt last season. And Gobert is not, you know, Gobert is a top 25, top 20 player. But it wouldn't shock me if it was essentially the same offer the Wolves called Brooklyn for, to try and offer for Durant. And that obviously did not happen. But at any rate, interesting to see the Wolves as one of only like six teams that really had any traction on trade talks with Brooklyn that made their way to the public, to the public eye. And it's always good to see that activity. And of course, Tim Connelly's no stranger to being in the thick of things, as we found out. The Wolves to date still have the biggest move of the NBA offseason with the Gobert trade. All right, that's all we have for today here on the show. We'll be back, of course, on Wednesday. We're doing Monday, Wednesday, Friday shows right now here for the next couple of weeks. We'll go back to daily about mid-September, so we're not far off. It's about to really pick up here shortly. So make sure to come back on Wednesday for the show. A big thank you to those of you that do make Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. It's genuinely appreciated. Of course, you can find us on YouTube. Please like the video. Please subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Please comment below. It all helps. And if you listen on Apple, please help with a review there as well. You can find us anywhere. Of course, that includes Odyssey as well as Google and Spotify as well. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. And also at B Beacon with two Bs, two Es, C-K-E-N. Of course, the Locked On Wolves podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. And for your second listen, get up to date on the latest news and rumors in the league in just 30 minutes every day, Monday through Friday, with Locked On NBA. Locked On NBA, your daily NBA update in just 30 minutes. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.